I'm Brad Locke.
I'm Dylan Barnes.
And you're listening to Prep Rally, a high school sports podcast brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Well, knock on wood, Dylan, but as of right now, no football games this week are canceled because of COVID.
It's good news.
We had six last week.
The SEC can't say the same.
No, they can't, can they?
No. Mississippi high school football is doing well this week so far.
So far, hope I didn't jinx it. We still got 2 days. A lot could happen. But, yeah, as of right now, for the first time this season, no games canceled. I mean, we've had at least one every week, starting with that Saltillo-Itawamba game in the first week. Of course, the whole season got postponed by 2 weeks because of all that. But anyway, so welcome into the program. I'm Brad with Dylan. We're gonna spend the next few minutes talking high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. Prep Rally comes to you every Wednesday. You can find us on iTunes, any of your podcast apps, or online at preprally.djournal.com. And be sure to check out our video show, the DJ Preps Football Preview Show, also on Wednesdays. In fact, that one's up online right now at djournal.com, where we break down three big games coming up this Friday and make predictions and whatnot. Or Dylan insists on bragging about how bad he's beaten me in the predictions.
Hey, I'm the rookie, man. You gotta have a little pride in
that's what it
being
is.
The new guy.
Rookie luck. Beginner's luck. That's it. Sure. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So we got plenty of football to talk about here, man. We got some volleyball. Playoffs have started. We'll have athletes of the week and all that fun stuff as well later on in the program. Let's start with the football rewind. And we'll start with the game I was at because Tupelo was off, so I got to go see Nettleton and Kossuth. Big Division 1-3A game. Kossuth came in 1-4, but had played a tough schedule. Mm-hmm. Nettleton came in 4-0, had not played as tough a schedule as Kossuth, in my opinion. But tell you what, Nettleton put it to him, 55-20.
Yeah.
And Davis Oswalt, the quarterback, first year as a quarterback. I mean, he had played it before, like junior high, ninth grade, I think a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then he became like one of the best linebackers around the next 2 years. And then this year, after the Graham Gardner graduated, they needed a quarterback. So they turned to Davis, who is a very good athlete. And he can throw it and he can run it. And I was very impressed with what I saw, Dylan. I mean, he had 221 yards passing and three touchdowns. And then he had 145 rushing and two touchdowns there on the ground. So he counted for five touchdowns total. And, you know, it was a close game early. I mean, it was only 7-6 after one quarter. And then it was Nettleton was up 14-13. And then it was – I mean, that second quarter was pretty wild. There's like five touchdowns. They just kept going back and forth, back and forth. And so it was 28-20 Nettleton at halftime. And Kossuth – two of their scores came because of trick plays. They had a Zamarius Alexander threw a halfback pass for a touchdown. I think that one went about 56 yards. And then another one, the kid, the last name Bright, Hunter Bright maybe, he threw a pass. They did a double reverse and then he threw it for a big gain. That led to a touchdown. But otherwise, they didn't have that much success throwing the ball. But Kossuth is more of a running team anyway.
Right.
But Nettleton's defense overall, you know, did pretty well. I mean, they shut him out in the second half. And so Nettleton gets the big 55-20 win there and moves to 5-0 on the season for the first time since I believe it's 2006. And that year they won their first 14 games and then didn't lose until the state championship that year. And let me see here. Who else did well? They had a lot of guys play well. Roderick Patterson, the running back, real solid, 122 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. He also had a touchdown reception. And like I said, the Nelta did pretty solid against the run. The Alexander kid I mentioned earlier for Kossuth, he's their number one running back. He had 88 yards on 21 carries, so he never really got loose against them. And so nice win for Nettleton against a Kossuth team that I think is better than its record might indicate. Okay, Itawamba AHS and Shannon. That one was in Fulton, was it not?
Yeah.
No, Shannon.
Yeah,
you're
you
right.
Got me.
Tricked you. You were there.
Right.
A defensive struggle. I did not expect it to be. I mean, we talked about the fact going in that they both know how to create turnovers, but I didn't know it was going to be that low scoring. It was 12-6.
Yes.
And Itawamba forced six.
Yeah, and I think Shannon ended up with three. So
right.
It was that's really, we talked about it, like you said last week. It was like turnovers are going to be key in this game, considering I think it was Shannon went into the game with 13 turnovers on the year, and Itawamba went into the game with 12 turnovers on the year, you know, by their defenses and stuff. So, you know, you knew that those defenses were opportunistic and that, you know, that could be a major role, and it certainly was. I mean, Itawamba just, man, their defense, you know, that's the first I've got to say on this year, and they're not big. They're not the fastest defense in the world. They're, you know, they just, you know, you look out there at them and they just, you know, some of their defensive linemen don't just scare your socks off or nothing like that. But they just, like, they just find the ball and go, you know, and attack in the air and things like that. And so they ended up with six turnovers, ended up with that 12-6 win. And the game was tied there. Both teams scored. I think it was Isaac Smith, the safety there from he's like a sophomore,
mm-hmm.
and he finished with 16 tackles and had that interception at the end of the first quarter. And then Tay Chandler took the first carry from the quarterback position. He went in the Wildcat and went 31 yards for a touchdown. Went up 6-0 there early, first play of the second quarter, and then that turnover bug hit Itawamba, and Luther Foster from Shannon linebacker scoops up a fumble off a bad snap by Itawamba and ran it in for like a 17-yard touchdown, tied it up 6-6. Then they got – it was just turnover after turnover, it felt like. And then they got in the fourth quarter and still tied 6-6. And Maddox Hendricks, kicker, he's a new kicker this year for Itawamba. Mm-hmm. He hit a 22-yarder and a 26-yarder. Itawamba got two drives to go off of turnovers inside, you know, basically almost started both drives in the red zone there. Wow. And couldn't capitalize on it with touchdowns and had to kick two field goals there and ended up 12-6. And then Shannon moved the ball. Jamarcus Shines, the quarterback, he had like a 34-yard run and got him down to like the 25-yard line, mm-hmm. under a minute left. And Itawamba called a timeout, reset their defense. And Marquion Green came up with a strip sack the first play after that timeout. Coach Hoots, Clint Hoots, nice. said, I was telling him, he's like, we got to do whatever we can to get the ball. That's what we've been doing all night long. He comes up with a strip sack, and Itawamba recovers it and seals that game off. So, big, big Division II 4A win because, you know, like we said, Pontotoc, Morville, Shannon, Itawamba, they're all
kind of packed in there tight, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a big win for them, for sure.
Certainly. And then one more game to look at from last week. East Union takes control in Division I 2A by defeating Walnut and defeating them handily. Final score was 56-30, and to no one's surprise, Colton Plunk had another huge game. 294 yards and four touchdowns on the ground. Yeah, I'm not really super surprised by this result.
I'm not either. I think, too, when you look at it, too, that's what he did to Walnut, who's we've talked about is clearly the second-best team in that division. So from the schedule from here on out for East Union and for Colton Plunk, it seems like he's going to have these 250 yards and four touchdowns every week, you know, something along those lines. Pretty much until we get to the playoffs and somebody can challenge them.
Yeah, I mean, this is a shortened season, and he could have close to 2,000 yards before the playoffs even start.
Yeah.
The rate it's he's amazing. Going. And so East Union in control of that division now. Let's look ahead to some games this week. Man, this one could be really good. This is the one you're going to.
Yes, I'm excited.
New Albany at Corinth. Two really good offenses. Mm-hmm. But my question is, as I asked on the football show, is New Albany's defense for real? They've been playing better lately. Mm-hmm. Okay, last couple of weeks they've allowed a total of 24 points, I think. But they're facing a different kind of offense, a more dangerous offense than what they've been facing, I think. Well, take that back. Amory was a pretty darn dangerous offense.
Yeah,
and they held them to 10 points.
Yeah, that's what when we talked about in the preview show. That's kind of what's throwing me off here is because right. None of us expected New Albany's defense to do that to Amory because, you know, like we've talked ad nauseum about Amory. But so it's kind of throwing me off because, you know, but Corinth's a different offensive tack than what Amory provided.
It's the wing T, and they're going to run it more
mm-hmm.
than Amory probably.
Right.
And they got multiple guys that can run it and catch it, and they got a pretty good young quarterback in Bronner Kurgene. So, Corinth's defense, of course, will have to deal with New Albany, and you know, they got the two-headed monster at running back with C.J. Hill and A.I. Nugent. Joe Mathis has proved to be a pretty solid quarterback for them. You know, mm-hmm. he hasn't really made too many mistakes. So he has lost a few fumbles this year, but otherwise, you know, he's been getting it to his playmakers, Isaiah Corrin and guys like that, and You know,
yeah, just, I mean, we talked about it first week with New Albany. Their offense is legit. Like, I mean, they've been proved it every week. They've scored 38, 45, 50, or 35, 31, and 38 in every game. So, like, their lowest season total is 31 against Amory.
They're going to score
points. Yeah. But Corinth, you know, it's like you said, it's really up down to their defense and what they can do. But also, it's getting over the hump. Corinth beat them 8 years in a row.
Yeah, beat them 56-20 last year.
Yeah, that Corinth team last year was special, and this Corinth team is really good. Like, they brought some pieces back that are still really good. But sometimes it's getting over the name on the chest type of thing. You've lost 8 times in a row. You know, it's like, you know, just even though these kids weren't there 8 years ago, they were in second grade or something, I don't know, you know, and so like, you know, they probably didn't really pay attention to them, but it's still something to do with, like, hey, you know, this is a team we can't beat, so it'll be interesting.
Another game real quick to look at: Lewisburg at Tupelo. The Golden Wave back after an unscheduled week off, but South Haven had to go into quarantine, so they could not play that game, but they, you know, they get the forfeit, they get the win. So Tupelo enters this week's game against Lewisburg, 3-3 overall, 2-1 in division. I don't know a lot about Lewisburg other than what I found on their stat page. They got some guys that can run the ball. They got two guys with over 400 yards rushing. They're 2-4 overall, 0-3. Tupelo should win this game.
I was just going to say, I don't think they stand much of a chance against Tupelo.
Probably not.
I'm not trying to be mean. That's just...
Yeah, and you know, the way Tupelo started to run the ball really well lately with Kyson Brown and Jarius McGinnister, I just really want to see if Jake Ware can really have a really good game throwing the ball. He hasn't had the kind of game that you expect him to have yet, mm-hmm. and we've talked about there's various reasons for that.
Right.
Doesn't have those 2D1 receivers back. He's had a lot of drops by his receivers this year. And, you know, other times he's just been off. It seems like he's been missing. When he misses, he tends to miss high, which is, you know, not an unusual thing for a quarterback, especially one with a strong arm like his. So, anyway, Tupelo will be at home on Friday, Division 1-6A game. They won this game last year 43-26. Mm-hmm. And then finally, oh, boy, this is the big one. Nettleton at Amory. Nettleton and Amory are big big county rivals, but also big division rivals. So this is a big 1-3-A game for them. You got those two and Boonville all at 2-0 in the division. And so this would go a long way toward determining, you know, who wins the division or at least gets a top 2 seed for the playoffs.
Right.
So, man, this is a fun matchup. You got great weapons on both offenses.
Melissa's going to be there, right?
Yes, Melissa
Meadow. I'm kind of jealous of her, too.
I am, too.
I'm excited to be at New Albany Corinth, but I wish I could be at two places at one time.
Yeah.
I want to see this one, too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you got... you know, Nettleton has not really faced a great passing game yet this year. And with Hunter Jones and his receivers, that's a great passing game.
Yeah,
definitely.
Understatement.
To say the least. So their DBs will get tested. But on the other side of it, I mean, Davis Oswald, he's a double threat.
Right.
Can run, can throw, and he's got guys. He's got some good receivers. The Xavion Dilworth is pretty good.
Patterson, too.
Yeah, and Patterson's a big back that can get you some tough yards. And so they'll have to really wrap up, tackle him. So this could be a really close game. I could see it being kind of a high-scoring game as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, man, we made picks on the show. I think we both picked Amory.
Yeah, both of us were close.
But because they're at home. That's kind of what was the tipping point for me. Yeah. Plus, Amory, I think, has played
a little tougher schedule.
Yeah. I think I know still the jury's still a little bit out on Nettleton. I mean, they're good. Don't get me wrong. But I really want to see how they perform against a team of this caliber. That's our number one ranked small team. Nettleton's our number four ranked small team. So,
yeah, I agree. I'm with you there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's the football look ahead. And now we will switch to volleyball. The playoffs started on Tuesday. How about that? It almost snuck up on me.
Yeah, I know. It did kind of come out of nowhere, didn't it?
That's been a weird season. Yeah. As with football.
Yeah, like football's almost over. Like, you realize that?
I don't say that. I know basketball. I'm already working on preseason basketball stuff because it starts in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, weeks. I know, like, Blue Mountain schedule. Like, they're playing like in October.
Man, so. I'm gonna have to hustle to get all this preseason stuff done. We gotta sit down and talk about the stories.
There we go.
So Tuesday night, you and I both got out to cover some playoff volleyball. We will start with the match I had: Oxford hosting Starkville in a 6A battle. And, you know, I was expecting this one really to go 5 sets. I mean, they're me both too. Really good teams. Starkville's our number two ranked team. Oxford was ranked earlier in the year, and they lost a few matches against some good teams, so they fell out of the rankings. But they're still obviously a very good team. And plus, they lost several players to COVID during the year. They had to sit out some games, and so they were not at full strength for a lot of the season there. But they were definitely at full strength Tuesday night, and they looked it. I mean, they just rolled right through Starkville 3-0. It was honestly quite impressive. They won by scores of 25-21, 25-16, and 25-16. And that first set was the most competitive. They got behind, Oxford got behind 10-4, then they went on a run, got ahead 16-14, and ended up, then I think it was, they were up 22-21 and scored the last 3 points to finish it off. And then the next two sets were kind of competitive, but toward the end, not so much, as they pretty much put it away authoritatively. And speaking of authoritative, man, Ainsley Tack, their outside hitter.
Yeah.
Dude, she's one of the more powerful hitters I've seen this year. Because there's some girls you just know when they go up after you see, you know, the other team is like not looking forward to trying to field that ball.
They're just putting their hands in front of their face, like just please.
And they had trouble with it too. Yeah. They had a lot of trouble handling her kills, and so she had I think it had her with 14 kills on the night, and she had 15 digs as well. So she did pretty well all around. And then Brianna Lyons had 5 kills. Ava East had 5 kills. Catherine Bianco, I think, had 4 kills. Yeah. As a team, Oxford had 35 kills. Starkville only had 20.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's due to Oxford. They did not let the ball hit the floor that often. They really, really good at keeping it in play, especially Catherine Bianco. Mm-hmm. She's their setter and kind of the leader of that team. And, man, there were several balls that you thought for sure they were going to hit the floor. She just, her reflexes were so quick. She kept it alive and kept points alive. And that was a huge, huge thing for Oxford. So she ended up with, like I said, 4 kills, 10 digs, 2 aces. I don't know how many assists. I never got that number, but they had 35 kills and she probably had assists on at least 30 of them.
Yeah. You know, typically with those setters, as long as the ball finds them, they're probably getting those assists on those.
Right. Exactly. So that's a very impressive win for Oxford, and they'll host DeSoto Central on Saturday in the second round. And then we had Hickory Flat and West Union. That's the one you were at, Dylan. Yeah. And Hickory Flat, not surprisingly.
Yeah, well.
One handily.
Yeah, well, West Union was overmatched. I think they came in the match 4-11 on the year. Like, two of their 4 wins was in division that got them that number 2 seed and stuff. So, and they're in their second year. And
right.
It's just, you know, tough deal catching Hickory Flat first round.
And they don't have an Emma Wilson.
Yeah. And Emma Wilson is the difference maker. I feel like she probably could start on nearly every team around here. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're talking about the 1A level in volleyball, like, she's, you know, the best player in 1A, and it's probably not close.
Right.
And
she,
like you said, Emma, usually it's her kills. Usually she's racking up like 20 something kills a night and, you know, shoving it down people's throats nearly, like, you know, on every set. But she had 9 kills. But the more impressive thing last night was she had 21 aces. Which is outstanding.
That's a lot of aces.
West Union, you know, is a little confused sometimes on their serve receives, is leaving gaps open. And she hits the ball with such top spin that it just, like, it barely gets over the net and it just dies. Like, it just, boom, just straight to the floor.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's difficult if you've never seen it before. And West Union looked like they've never saw that type of serve, and Emma took advantage. The first set was kind of close. Not really. It was, like, a little more competitive than the other two. Hickory Flat pulled it out 25-13. Hickory Flat had some service errors and stuff that kind of helped that cause. But then second set, Emma starts the set on the service line, and she has 10 aces there in a 15-0 run. They started out the second set with 15-0 run.
Wow.
She turned around in third set, did the same thing. They went up to on a 17-0 run behind 10 other aces from her. So, you know, and that was that. That was pretty much it. And Hickory Flat's doing this without 2 starters. 2 starters are out. Contact tracing from COVID, a student there at Hickory Flat. Tested positive, and they went through the classrooms and did the seating charts and stuff, and found 2 starters that were like that. So, but they get them back Thursday, so they'll be back for Biggersville this Saturday. They'll be at full strength Saturday going into the second round, and if they're full strength, there's probably not a team in 1A that's going to beat them.
I don't think so either. Then finally, we had what I expected to be a really good match, and it was. Melissa had this one. Amory hosting Alcorn Central in the 3A first round. It went all five sets, and Alcorn Central pulled it out 3-2. They were down 14-12 in the last set. You know, the fifth set goes to 15. So they were a point away from losing, and they scored the final 4 points to win that one 16-14. The other set scores were 25-20, 25-19. Actually, Alcorn Central won the first two sets, went up 2-0. And then the next two went to Amory, 29-27 and 25-23. So, I mean, this was back and forth the entire time. And, you know, I haven't seen Amory this year, but I've seen Alcorn Central
this year
and last. And we know they got Mia Griffin, the reigning Daily Journal Player of the Year, and she's great. I will say, I don't think she's got as much help this year as she had last year. And you've seen that in some of the results. Mm-hmm. And I saw it when I saw them play against Corinth earlier this year. Still a good team, but I'm not sure if they're quite up to the level they were last year. But Griffin certainly is as good as she's ever been. Just a junior. She had 18 kills for Alcorn Central, and while Elena Childers had 12. And so Amory ends the season at 10-6, but, you know, they had a solid year. I mean, they were in our rankings at one point.
Yeah, they beat Belmont, I think, that week when I went over there and watched them. And they jumped in number 5 there in our rankings and stuff. So, yeah, they've got a good program going over there. So
yeah, certainly. Okay, like we mentioned earlier, second round is Saturday, and we've got the full schedule up at djournal.com. Let's give a shout-out. This week it goes to the Aberdeen football team. They snapped a 15-game losing streak with a 47-16 win over Hatley. First win for the Bulldogs since their 2019 season opener. So Alex Williams wins his debut as Aberdeen coach last year, and he has to wait 15 more games to get another win. That's tough. But
that's tough stuff.
But that's a big, definitely a big win for Aberdeen, and a convincing win as well. That makes them 1-5 on the season. Let's close it out with Athletes of the Week. Athletes? I didn't know athletes had 3 syllables. That's amazing. Athletes of the Week, female athlete, Catherine Bianco. I mentioned her a while ago, the Oxford setter. And that 3-0 win over Starkville had 4 kills, 10 digs, 2 aces, and a bunch of assists in that Tuesday night win. Male Athlete of the Week, we talked about him as well. Davis Oswalt, the quarterback for Nettleton, 11 of 17, 221 yards, 3 touchdowns passing, 10 carries, 145 yards, 2 touchdowns rushing in that 55-20 win over Kossuth last Friday. And that is all the time we have for this episode of Prep Rally. Thank you all for joining us. We come to you every Wednesday. You can find us on iTunes, any of your podcast apps, or online at preprally.djournal.com. Follow us on Twitter at djournalpreps. I'm on there at Brad Locke. Dylan's on there at Dylan Barnes DJ. We'll come back to you next week on Thursday because Dylan's going to be out of town.
Yeah.
So
my fault, guys.
Just wait. You have to wait a day longer if you're able. Just. It'll be fine. I promise.
Yeah. Okay. We'll make it up to you. We'll make it a really good show.
Excellent. The best show
ever.
Okay, bye.